Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is film critic. This is really screwing me up not having Mark here, but film critic from joeblow.com, Mr. Jimmy O. James Oster. And you are muted, James.
I am so tired. I apologize to all three of you. Oh my God. Yes.
I know. And unfortunately, I mean, it's almost funny, but unfortunately, Mark can't be here. And this is, it's absolutely killing him because he really worked hard to, as a go-between with Vincent DeSanti. And so we have a special guest this time. It is Mr. Vincent DeSanti. He is one of the, I guess, the founder of, or one of the founders of Womp Stomp Films, if I'm not mistaken, and the director of fan films of Friday the 13th, Never Hike Alone, Never Hike in the Snow, and the forthcoming this fall, Never Hike Alone 2. And I think all of our fans out there, or many of them, are quite familiar with Mr. DeSanti. We watched a movie with you in it. What was it? What was the one that we watched a couple weeks?
13 Fanboy.
13 Fanboy, yeah.
And you were in that.
Yeah, I am in that. I do pop up.
I have all sorts of questions just locked and loaded for that movie. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, hey, I also want to point out, Matt, that Vincent, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, our only returning guest ever.
Except for Jimmy. Wow. Yeah. When
Jimmy's a permanent fixture now.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah.
Careful with that, true. Vincent. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Wow. Vincent, you're taking it from me, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, now I guess now after this, I have to be a permanent fixture.
Yeah,
right.
That's the trend. That's the trend.
Well, that's right.
Well, we do have an opening, so I mean, you know, Mark's not here. I just why don't you just start filling in? I mean, hey, why not?
I guess anytime Mark can't make it, you guys just give me a buzz. I'll check it out.
Yeah, that's what happened with Mark. He was a guest star, and then he joined the show. Same thing happened with Jimmy. So you know,
So our show is going to be a little bit different this time because we're actually recording it early. So this will be coming out in a couple weeks. So not that the audience listening is going to know that, but we're doing a little now differently this time. Yeah. So normally we talk about horror movies that we've seen recently first, but this time we've already done that, so we don't have anything to talk about. So we really have all of our time to spend talking to you, Vincent, and how things are going. So maybe start out giving us just a little check-in with where you are in the process of Never Hike Alone 2 and how you're feeling about it, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right now we're about like exactly halfway through physical production, so shooting the film. We have 9 days completed of 15 or 16 at the end of the day, depending on if we end up adding another day. It has been definitely a big challenge because we thought we were going to make the film last year, and a major location fell through. It threw our schedule into sort of chaos and then sort of made sense for us to regroup and start at the beginning of this year. And then this year started off with the most snow and precipitation that California has gotten in like 100 years.
Yep.
And so it created a state of emergency in the mountains that ended up moving our first week of production from the second week of April to now the last week of June, which is what I'm preparing for right now. But we have navigated around sort of the bumps in our schedule and the change-ups and all the things that sort of come that way. You know, the first 9 days have gone really, really well. Two of those, including what we shot for the special sneak preview that we released in January. We shot that last August with Tom Matthews and Horace Stevie, myself, Brian Forrest, and a few other members of the Womp Stomp Films team. We have shot out our interior and exterior hospital locations. We have shot out the rest of our Camp Crystal Lake scenes, things that take place on the water, in the water, on the lake, things like that. Those have been shot out. So all that's left to do is get up to camp. And so it seems pretty serendipitous that we're going to end the shoot up at camp. We're going to be where we were for Never Hike in the Snow, the same spot, Camp Laverne. And then we have the same camp from Never Hike Alone, which is, it doesn't even have a name because it's actually an abandoned camp. So we're spending some time up there to marry the two worlds together. A lot of stunts, a lot of fighting on left on the plate. A lot of the effects are left on to do, as well as a bunch of dialogue scenes. We get a lot of establishing, a lot of back and forth between Rick and Tom. So we'll have Vinny and Tom there in a few weeks. Andrew Lady is back from Never Hike Alone. Anna Campbell is back from Never Hike in the Snow. She plays Mark's mom. She plays Dr. Diana Hill. Obviously, I'm back as Ghost Jason along with my stunt double, Brian Forrest. And then a plethora of brand new faces, which will be really nice to see on screen. This is the biggest Never Hike Alone production that we've done, though, so far. We've been sort of, by necessity, smaller films. So this is a feature film. For those of you who aren't familiar, who have seen Never Hike in the Snow, Never Hike Alone, Never Hike in the Snow was meant to be a pilot episode to a 4-part miniseries. But with the pandemic, we got pushed back to 2023. So what people are going to be seeing in Never Hike Alone 2 is not just what it was like. It was sort of originally plotted this way, but then to make it on the budgets that we were raising back then, I broke it out into 4 episodes, Never Hike in the Snow, Never Hike Again, Jason Takes Crystal Lake, and The Final Hike. And with the pandemic pushing everything back, I pushed everything back into one movie, you know, because we already shot Never Hike in the Snow, so that didn't come back then. But as one movie to become what it originally was, which was just Never Hike Alone 2 as a sequel. So it's going to be, I'm really excited. It mostly picks up right after Never Hike Alone 1 ends, but there is a little bit of pre-lap with leading into the movie a little bit. It's meeting Tom Matthews, Tommy Jarvis, and what his life is like, and sort of what events led him to finding Kyle MacLeod, and what sort of happened after Kyle MacLeod got there, and then sort of as that night unfolds, Jason chasing them down to the hospital. And trying to kill everybody along the way. So it's a fun extension of Never Hike Alone 1. So if you like the first one, this one's going to be a little bit different. This is more of a traditional Friday, a traditional feature film. No longer relying on like the half found footage aspect, although found footage does play an important role in the film, which is pretty nice. We found a way to stay on theme. And then just, you know, this is Womp Stomp Films team now with 3,000 backers and a bunch of great producers who have supported us to make something much bigger than we've ever had the privilege to make before. So I don't know, we just consider ourselves lucky and we're excited, and it's been a lot of work. I'm very tired. But so far so good. We're just taking it one day at a time, one shoot block at a time, and we're really excited for the next one that's coming up.
Yeah, you guys have to be like just thrilled with the amount of backing you've had too, because the funding has been amazing for this. Obviously, your first two were hugely successful, and everybody, you know, a lot of people like it, and a lot of people consider this like canon almost. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to treat it that way. We're trying to treat it like people have been supporting it, and you know, we come at it with a very serious mindset. We're having a lot of fun doing it, but it's hard work. You know, making a movie is not easy, especially in California. There's just so many more loopholes and people to pay off and costs associated, and like with the film sliding back, there's a bunch of other stuff that I won't jump into, just as far as like how that works logistically for your film, and then when it comes to taxes and all that fun stuff. But yeah, the support has really helped us. This extra support, which we thought was sort of like, oh wow, like we have all this money now, it's like, thank God we had this money, because if it wasn't for everyone supporting it and continuing support it and pushing us past our stretch goals, we would have been in trouble in a few places, as far as like with things extending, with weeks not being put together, rentals getting split up over, you know, multiple rentals versus one long rental, which is usually cheaper, you can get better deals. So it has increased, like the cost of production has increased over time with the film because of the way that other things have impacted it and shifted our schedule around things, like in a lot of ways, things we can't control. So yeah, we definitely ate up our contingency budget. We're still raising to keep things going. So yeah, we definitely been pushing the campaign a lot lately. Recently we released a brand new sort of marketing campaign and image for the film with Tom and myself doing some photography with our still photographer, Ashley Covington, and RYVE Creative created a set of new posters for us, which we made new Blu-ray wraps. And there's an there's actually a contest for backers. If they get the Jarvis versus Jason package, that enters them into a contest to become an executive producer. And they will get all of the executive producer perks, get their name listed as an executive producer next to Tom and Vinny and myself and Bill Hunt, who is one of our, who's our art director as well, but was a visual effects artist on Jason Goes to Hell and Lord of the Rings and all of those things. So it's a cool thing to be on. And you walk away with Tommy Screen New Shotgun, which is really cool. So, wow. You know, we, with this time that we have left, we've been really trying to, you know, just rally as many. I mean, people are still discovering Never Hike Alone. It's crazy. Like, people, yeah. I just found out about this. I see it in the comments and YouTube. And I'm like, hey, it took you 6 years, but glad you're here finally. Hey, by the way, if you want to see the next one, you can get your name in the credits. But I think at the end, that's sort of, that's the big goal, is that there's, you know, the film, maybe the film's 80 minutes runtime, but like 5 of those minutes is going to be scrolling through all the names that have backed this film, which which is just cool because it shows all these people from around the world. I mean, I think right now it's up to 42 or 43 different countries, over 3,000 individual backers.
Wow.
Way more than we've ever had before. And, you know, we still have, you know, it's June now and we're going to, the film's not going to come out till October. So you're probably going to see us keep the doors open until mid September so we can finish credits by then. And even after that, we'll leave it open because when the film comes out, more people are going to discover it as people are talking about it. They're going to get into the series. More people are going to want more. And so we'll probably stay open through the end of the year with our Indiegogo. And then once we have our final orders in and we're receiving all of our Blu-rays and all of those things, we'll shut it all down. And that will be it. And then that and that's how fan films work. This doesn't go on forever. Eventually it ends. And then what everybody gets, and it becomes your collectible item that hopefully continues to increase in value. As I see on eBay, people paying $75 for a Never Hike Alone Blu-ray when I got them for $20.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's like, but I mean, I guess that's the price of getting them right now. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. And it's a cool thing, but yeah, that's the cool thing about the fan film is that the backing creates the material and then the material becomes collectible items. And then, you know, in 10 years, when people are talking about the period, the dark times when there were, you know, legal problems and no one could get a movie off the ground, there were these spunky, you know, fans from all over the world that all created a bunch of fan films, and somebody may have all the DVDs from all of them, but I think it'd be kind of cool to own a piece of Friday history saying that, like, this is the time when the fans took over.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, Vincent, I had a question. I mean, not that you really need another reason to help out this cause, but as I was reading through, I noticed that you're giving some proceeds to your earnings to 3 extremely great causes, and I was kind of hoping you could get into those a bit.
Yeah, and I'll be really upfront with this. Like, I believe that if a fan film is so successful that it's got so much money that it doesn't need to use all the money on the film, that you got to find avenues. You can't keep that money. Mm-hmm. So you have to find an avenue for go. We've backed the Penny Pines Reforestation Program. We've backed the J.D. Martz Recovery Fund, and we've also backed the Special Olympics. So those are 3 organizations that we've gotten behind when we've had some extra cash and put it in there. But I will say this, that every dollar that we raise for a Never Hike movie, like, it goes into the movie. Like, 9 times out of 10, it goes into the movie. The only time we've ever had, or the only time we really had any overages is when, or not overages, but we see any sort of, like, positive in the numbers is when we finish the film, when we do home video campaigns. Then we walk away with a little bit of money and we have something to donate. But it's mostly as a safety precaution of doing a fan film and not making profit and making sure that people see that our intentions are good. We're here because we love Friday the 13th. It's been a long time since we've had an official movie, and fan films are great. But, you know, we wanted to push the envelope on fan films and make people and blur the line. And that's been our goal. And I think that we've been pretty successful at that. And we couldn't have done that without the support of fans backing us, spreading the word, you know, word of mouth, or just even telling somebody else about the film so they discover it. Or even like parents showing it to their kids, because Never Hike Alone is a little bit more of a safer film to show your film than maybe, you know, Part 4. Right. I mean, I guess you can get away with Part 6 because there's no nudity into it. But, you know, for the most part, it's a good introduction to Jason. It sticks to the themes. And I think, you know, fans have, without the fans, we wouldn't have been able to do it. And, you know, when we do have a chance, we get to do something really good with the money as well.
Yeah, that's great.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Could, I'm going to Really quickly, because, you know, I remember I was working at Arrow in the Head, and I there was a lot of talk when Never Hike Alone came out, and we were all like, oh, what is this? Because let's be honest, a lot of fan films didn't have that kind of care and love. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. when that came out, do you feel that you've kind of raised the bar for what people can do with an existing property?
Well, I mean, I think I was definitely like riding off the wave of Ari Shanker. He did the Dark Power Rangers fan film. He did Dirty Laundry. There were the difference, I would say, is that like an Ari Shanker, somebody who has like a fantastic film and commercial career. Like, he has the money, he's got the connections, he's calling favors in. So, you know, he kind of has the carte blanche to kind of throw his weight around and try some stuff and call it like, I don't even know if you would call it a fan film. I think you would just call it like, you know, like a proof of concept. You know, they probably say, hey, this is a proof of concept that I'm using for pitching and I'm trying to get money to do this, yada, yada, yada. I think for the consumer, I think the consumer independent market, yeah, we were definitely out to, it wasn't so much to like really put anyone else on notice. It was just ourselves. We were just, we'd worked on a bunch of independent films and, you know, saw the limitations of it, but we were lucky that we did this film at the cusp when prosumer cameras were coming out, things like the Sony AS7 II and the Canon 5D Mark II and Mark III and Mark IV, things that were shooting HD, things that look cinematic. You can change lenses. You could do it in a way for a price that was affordable, unlike the fan films of the past, which usually had to rely on digital handycams, things that only had one zoom lens with no cinematic value to it at all, and, you know, filming onto DV tapes and maybe cutting in camera, or maybe you had some, like a Final Cut Pro that you could cut in. But it was really sort of tough to get the right technology up until about the time that we started doing it. It was when you saw that change in independent cinema really take over and the films really start to go there. So, you know, I think with a combination of the technology and then the background, working in story and animation for like up to 8 years at that point, that I had sort of good training. It was a good combination of the both. I had a really good team. Chris Ellis was my DP, along with JD Martz. Both of them were very in tune with how to get cinematic images. You know, so we just started renting things and experimenting and trying to get it there. And by doing that, I definitely noticed that now that becomes, like, if you're going to do a fan film, now people really push to say, well, we want to do it like Never Hike Alone did it. Like, if we're going to do it, let's do it like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. We want to repeat that success. So we do see, like, I get a lot of emails from fans asking us how we do it. How do you navigate the legal waters? How do you shoot it like that? What cameras did you use? Like, how many people do you have on set? Are you SAG? Are you not SAG? You know, union production, all those things. And so depending on, you know, the question, depending on who's asking and their experience, I give them an answer saying, you know, here's basically how you get started. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is up to you. And it all comes down to experimentation and doing your work and doing the study. And, you know, and since then I've seen a lot of great effort. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's a lot of great effort. I think that the quality across the board has raised, and now you're seeing people really try. Like, people are putting together like real productions. It's not just going out in the backyard anymore. People are like going through the paces of independent filmmaking. And so I think that the real winners are the fans. It's the fans who have taken this opportunity with fan films being so popular and getting funding and getting those things to expand themselves as filmmakers. And I think fans have won because they've had material to chew on every 3 or 4 months. There's a new Friday the 13th fan film coming out that has a wildly different plot. So whether you can say whether or not you can say the quality is up to par of what you think that, you know, it should be based on sort of the way that we've skewed it, at the end of the day, you got to kind of like look at the effort, look who's involved, and just see, you know, it's just fans out there having fun, and it's a lot better than nothing. So celebrate it for what it is.
Yeah. What, you guys used a Red for the previous film, right? Was that what I thought you said?
Yes.
I recall that.
Yeah, we used, our DP now, Evan Butka, he uses Red cameras. We've used a Red Epic. We used a Red Epic on Never Hike Alone, only for half the movie. The first half of the movie was shot with a Sony AS7 II, and Evan's lenses. So that's how we met Evan, was we were renting his lenses. Then he's like, guys, I have an Epic. Do you want to shoot with that instead? And we said, come on out, come shoot with us. That's awesome. And now, And so now Evan's been, you know, done really, really well in his career as a DP and in the camera world. And now he's up to, we work on a Red Ranger Monstro, which shoots 8K.
Wow.
We got beautiful, what's the name? I'm forgetting the lenses because I just worked with Atlas. So I have Atlas lenses on my mind, but we use, Takina Vista Primes. So Takina Vista Primes, the Red Ranger Monstro, which has a beautiful sensor. I'm really happy with the images that we're getting for Never Hike Alone 2. I think everything just coming right out with like the base LUT on it already looks good.
Yeah.
So, really happy with that. You know, Tokina has been our lens people since Never Hike in the Snow. They've worked with us. And then after that, it comes down to everything else you do on set. You know what I mean? The way you dress people, the way you dress the set, the way you light it, everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's all that too. So I have a really good team that's around me in all these different departments. And that's really what Womp Stomp Films is. It's a long-term collection of young and upcoming artists and crew workers and actors and actresses that, you know, that we've crossed paths in some way, shape or form. And I said, hey, you want to come on this crazy adventure? We're making another one of these. You could play this role. You could do this department. You could do this thing. Mm-hmm. And they've joined it. And, you know, now we have a full team that, you know, from pre-production to post-production, we can get through an entire production. So it's definitely built us from a group of friends going out into the woods and shooting things for fun. By the time we finish this adventure and this film comes out, we will be a fully fledged independent film studio that if we get funding for one of our original productions can go through all the paces just like a normal movie and maybe make something for the real streaming services at that point, instead of just releasing our material for free, which honestly, right, with this, I'm happy to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, this could be a total launching pad for your original stuff too. I mean, if people are, already are very interested in that. But I think probably this go around, you got a lot of interest because you're wanting to do another fan film of, sequel. But they see this, I have a feeling people are going to be saying, well, what else can you guys do? And maybe find a way to monetize it. Because you really can't monetize this at all, right? Is there any way to pay yourself for this? Or is this pretty much all volunteer?
No, I mean, the goal is just like to break even.
Yeah.
That's really the goal. I mean, we try to put as much into the production as possible. I try to take care of my team as much as possible because they're the ones that have to go out there. But I mean, I've taken time off.
Are you able to pay the crew?
Yeah, I'm able to pay the crew because I hire them as private contractors.
Okay.
So I'm able to hire people to do the job that I need them to do. But the main producers and people who are at the center of the film don't get paid. Okay. And I take the biggest hit because I take time off of work. I actually haven't been able to do like a full-time job in about a year and a half because wow. I've had this looming in the background being like, hey, at some point I got to take 2.5 months off to go make a movie. And every big company that I've interviewed at has been like, no, we're good. So a lot of what I've been doing is like piecemeal. I've been working either show to show or day to day. So if I have 3 months off, I can work on a TV show for 3 months and commit that time. And then if I got some stuff to do with this, like, okay, I pick up 3-4 days a week here and there while I'm doing other things and sort of working a supplemented income. Like I told you guys before we get started, I'm staying up here in Thousand Oaks as a guest for one of my mentors who was an EP on the first movie, Carolyn Gare. I was back in Massachusetts last year getting ready for production when everything shifted to this year. So I ended up staying in Massachusetts for another year and getting some work out there, worked on a couple of movies, did some commercials, and then also worked for my parents in their antique business. So it's been a very wild year of, I don't know where I'm going to be. And when Never Hike Alone 2 is done, I'm literally going to stand at the precipice of, you know, hopefully the goal is to go to Telluride Horror Show. We're going to premiere it on Friday the 13th in October, which is the exact 6-year anniversary to when we debuted Never Hike Alone 1 was on Friday the 13th in Telluride. And this is the first Friday the 13th in October there's been since we released Never Hike Alone. So just like, it seems like mathematically it's all sort of coming together, even though I didn't want to wait this long to do it.
Yeah. It worked out perfectly.
Worked out okay in the long run. And then after the movie's done, I'm going to walk out into the street of Telluride. I'm going to look left and I'm going to look right. I'm going to have to figure out which way I'm going after the film. Am I coming back to LA? Am I going back to Massachusetts? What jobs are going to be waiting for me? Is Never Hike Alone going to open a door? Never Hike Alone opened up a lot of doors, the original one. I got to do a lot of meetings, but I was so focused on making that movie and I had been coming out of animation when everyone was like, okay, what do you got? What are your pitches? I'm like, I've been working on Never Hike Alone for a year and a half. I haven't even thought about another movie, never mind any of those things. So it was a big lesson for me to learn. I got to meet a lot of very interesting people, and I've pitched since then. But I think after Never Hike Alone 2, now I had the opportunity. I've been paired with a few writers on a couple of different original projects that I can't really talk about. And really excited about those things. I have a list of things that I pitch. So I'm just ready to make those rounds and see what happens. But in the meantime, I may end up on another TV show just working on the AD department. I may end up back in Massachusetts just doing some house cleanouts for antiques. I may be doing those things, but I will be – what Never Hike Alone has taught me is that as much as I want to make a studio film or I want to go through the avenues to do it, we do have a backing. We do have people out there that allow us to make independent cinema. So if I want to make a short that I have, about a handful of those too that I could do, there's other shorts that we could make. We could always return to crowdfunding. We could always do it that way. And this fan base that we've built really just sort of lean on them to say, hey, we're here to make more stuff and we want to make some original things. And the funny thing is everyone's now don't you want to make original stuff so you can make money? I will say this, how many independent horror directors do you know that make a lot of money?
True.
So I don't think it's ever really about the money. It's about for me, it's about one thing. I want to make films that people watch.
Yeah.
That they want to tune in and watch. And that's been the glory of Never Hike Alone for me, is the fact that people watch it, they talk about it, and they want to talk about it with me every now and then, or when I bring it up in conversation, it's something that people recognize. I've spent years on films, dedicated years to single films that when I bring them up, people are like, what film? Yeah. And it's not a great feeling when you've done that. You know what I mean?
That's
so
true.
To do this on something like this, as much as it gets dismissed sometimes, I think by a few of my critics that are out there, I always just turn around and be like, hey, people are watching it, so I'm not going to argue with it. Why am I making a second one? Because, right now we're coming up on 4 million views on the first one. And making the first one opened up the opportunity for me to make the film that I've always wanted to make. The one, out of love, I've always wanted to work on a Friday the 13th, but I've always wanted to see a very specific Friday the 13th. It was one that put the nail in the coffin. It was the one that we never got after part 8 that was supposed to say, this is the final Friday and this is how we're going to end the whole series, and sort of blew it all up, literally. This was my chance to kind of come in and be like, no, this is how you close the franchise out, for the original franchise. And whatever they do in the future, I'm really looking forward to the Peacock series. I'm looking forward to see what they do when they finally bring it back to the theater. I'll obviously have opinions, but I hope maybe I'm in the conversation somewhere, even if it's just a name, they mention me and they say, nah, I'm not the fan film guy, but at least they brought my name up. Yeah. Whereas if I never did this, I would have never been part of the conversation, because I would have been tucked away in some boardroom somewhere in some animation company, figuring out how we were going to do the same formula for the 5,000th time with a different, goofy looking character.
Yeah.
So, that's sort of my, I'd rather be doing that for Friday the 13th. How do we tell the 5,000th movie of this thing?
Right.
I just feel like this is where my skill set is. It's horror. Comedy too, but horror is where I love to tell story, and these are the types of stories that I love to tell.
Someone came up to you and said, hey, we got the 13th Friday the 13th movie, we're finally going to make it, come on, direct it, do you have any ideas and thoughts that you'd be like, ooh, I know what I want to do?
I already have a trilogy figured out.
Oh,
I know. I've been sitting on a trilogy for 5 years. I know exactly what I would do. I know exactly how I would do it. I know the types of things that I would pitch. In fact, I don't just have a trilogy. I have two different ideas, depending on which way what they want to do. But both of them are based on the fact that we're not just making one. So I'm setting things up in one for three. And you got to do three at least. You got to go three. And if you don't go more than three, I think that Halloween did it right by they chose to do it that way. They just should have been a little bit more lock in step with, okay, this is exactly how it's going to pan out, and this is exactly how we're going to do it. Same thing with Star Wars. They were writing them as they went versus being no, this is where each one leads to. It's not that you can't make discoveries along the way. I wrote Never Hike Alone 2 5 years ago, and I've been making changes ever since, but it's based on all the things that updated as we made Never Hike Alone and Never Hike in the Snow and put the ghost cut together and did some thinking or sort of some mistakes we made in previous ones, being like, oh, maybe we can polish this up in part two and make this a little bit better. So I think that I think more than anything, no matter what they choose, that's what fans want. They want somebody in the creative seat who's like, no, 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 I am three films ahead already. Like, I'm here to make the first one, but I have a vision of where it's going to go, and I'm not playing guesswork. I'm not making it up as I go. And I think that's one of the great things about the Peacock series is that when you listen to Brian Fuller talk about it, he talks about the fact that he already has like the first two seasons outlined in a way. Like, he already knows what he's going to do for the first two seasons. So it, at least you know there's a general direction, and then you open yourself up for opportunity to move in different directions as you make it and you discover things along the way and people bring stuff to set. It helps you sort of navigate the creative dips and dives, not to always be stuck in one way if it's not working. So I think that's what fans want. They want somebody who's passionate and creative and who has a vision for where they want to take it. That way it's not like it was before where it just felt like they were making it up as they go every time a new movie came out.
Yeah,
that's true. We just watched a movie this last week for one of our previous episode. It was
Eyes of a Stranger,
and there was a John DeSanti is an actor, was the main actor. Is he related to you?
No, but when I would type in my name every now and then, like, he would always pop up. I know John DeSanti. That's like the only one. I'd be like, oh, like when I got my first IMDb credit, I'd like put my name in, and then he popped up. I went, oh, there's a DeSanti. Do I know him?
Yeah.
Like, so no, but I would, we're probably from the same part of Sicily though.
Probably. Yeah. I would imagine you. Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie though, I highly recommend it.
Jason, oh yeah.
Jason Lee's first film. Yeah. Really good film.
Cool. Nice. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of your IMDb credits, we're not letting you go until we talk about 13 Fanboy.
Yeah, you want to jump into 13 Fanboy now?
Yeah. So how did you get attached with that? And I mean, that must have been like an absolute dream project for you. So fill me in.
I mean, again, when people talk about like, oh, you did Never Hike Alone, what's that really gotten you? It's like, well, it got me cast in 13 Fanboy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not too shabby. I mean, that's how I met Deb. Deb actually contacted me because she had questions about crowdfunding. So right away, you know, I got to sit down and talk to Deb about crowdfunding. You know, she was looking for talent for the film. So I helped her, you know, recruit Haley Greenbauer. You know, she ended up getting Kyle MacLeod, Andrew Lady. So, you know, two of my friends ended up making the movie, which was really
cool. And you played yourself, right?
I did. I played myself.
Yeah.
Which in the end ended up making a lot of sense. I wasn't always supposed to be the character that I played in the long run. Like, I was always supposed to be in the movie. I was supposed to have a couple of cameos and pop up here and there. But I ended up wearing a bigger hat down the line due to some scheduling conflicts and not figuring out sort of like who could play a certain role. Mm-hmm. And then Deb came to me and said, well, we're thinking about making it you. And I was like, I don't want to say anything, but it's kind of perfect. It makes sense. It is like a bizarro version of me. And it, like, of course it would be me because I'm the psycho fan. So like,
right.
Let me play that role. You know what I mean? So it was a lot of fun to do that. I was always supposed to do a lot of the stunt work for that anyway. So I ended up doing the stunts. I got to fight Kane Hodder, got to fight CJ Graham, got to kill a lot of people. And then work with, and that's where I met Nora Hewitt, and Nora became the effects lead on all the Never Hike movies. In fact, when Nora and I had first met, the second night that we met, I started telling her about the Disappear music video and Never Hike in the Snow, and literally acted out both films for her so she could, like, this is the entire film and everything. I had it all figured out then. We've been good friends ever since. So 13 Fanboy was just a wonderful experience getting to know. That's where I got to meet Tracy Savage and Judy Aronson, who I'm still really good friends with. Tracy appears in the Ghost Cut for Never Hike Alone. She plays herself, who Tracy, for those of you who don't know, became an anchor, a news anchor in Los Angeles for over 20, 30 years. She actually teaches broadcast journalism, I believe at Cal State Northridge now. She's awesome. You know, Judy and I became, you know, we were like thick as thieves in the movie, so you know, we became really good friends. In fact, I was just texting her happy birthday. I'm excited to go hang out with her again. But it's cool, you know, all of these people were heroes to me as a kid growing up because they were the people that are in, you know, the films. And getting Never Hike Alone, I got to meet a lot of them personally. Tom McLaughlin, you know, we used to go get breakfast out in Hollywood before the pandemic all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, Judy took me out to an event of Part Four once where I got to sit down and talk to Joe Zito. Got to talk to Lawrence Monson and the twins and just kind of hang out and like, not just like, the cool thing is like, we're not at a convention and we're not doing like the, convention things and convention. It's like, it's just like hanging out with people, coworkers. Yeah. Like, yeah. So you get to sort of get that. And for me, it's nice because I always like to be a fly on the wall for people who have been doing this a lot longer than I have, who have stories, who have been on sets where shit has gone down. Yeah. And so you learn a lot from that. And it's just entertaining to me. So I would say that's been the greatest gift as far as like selfishly, like getting to meet a lot of the alumni and have those experiences of, you know, them not realizing it, but hearing their stories about the things that they went through as actors and, you know, directors and producers, you know, way back in the day. It has actually been really helpful in like me figuring out my career and feeling better about some of the things I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So it really is a blessing to sort of have that opportunity.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, something else I have a question about that I'm hoping you can give me some insight on. Speaking about what you touched on, how you played yourself, CJ Graham played himself, Kane Hodder played himself, Dee Wallace played herself. Yeah. Any insight as to why in the hell Corey Feldman played Mike Merriman?
That was his choice. He just wanted to be somebody else.
Yeah.
I asked the same question. I go, so Corey's not playing himself? He's like, no, he wanted to play this like crazy producer. That's like the one who stuck out to him. He wanted to come in and do like he wanted to come in and improv and have fun and, you know, do it on his terms. You know what I mean? Not just use his name, but like come in and actually play a part. So I think that was what he got out of it. He was pretty funny on set. You know, I heard that he was sort of improvising a lot of stuff and all the other actors were like, wait, where is this in the pages? What am I supposed to be doing right now? Wow. Where are we here? But you know, they figured it out. It fit in, you know, I think that he brings some comedy to the film. It's just cool. He was the one I didn't get to meet. I did meet him at the premiere, but I didn't meet him. He was just sort of there and then slinked out after the screening when we did the Q&A, but can't win them all.
He was probably on to the next project.
Yeah.
Or we had band practice. I don't know.
One of them. Well, there's that.
Yeah, that could be too. Yeah, he had a show that night. Yeah.
He's auditioning Angels.
Can you just touch a little bit on what the rules are for a fan film in terms of I know you can't monetize it in any way, but so you basically have to. In terms of you having DVD or a Blu-ray of it or whatever, you really can't sell it, right?
Correct. Well, what I can't do is I'll go over the list and I'll jump into that quick. It's like, first of all, you can't misrepresent yourself. You can't say this is Friday the 13th. Right. Like we say Never Hike Alone, a Friday the 13th fan film. It's in the title. That's the first thing. You can't like mislead people. Then you can't make a profit. You know, I can't sell it to Netflix and then get streaming points. I can't put it on Amazon and then, you know, sell the Blu-ray through that way. Or any goods really. I can't sell any goods in that sense as long as it's related or has something related to Friday the 13th on it. Can I sell something with Never Hike Alone on it? Maybe. I don't know if someone has the copyright to the phrase Never Hike Alone and maybe I need to get it. As long as it sort of doesn't do any of those things, you're okay. And then there's a gray area of how much money can you raise? How long can you make it? Can you have franchise people in it? All of these different things, depending on the different franchises that you're trying to make a fan film from, all of them have different rules. If you try to make a Godzilla fan film right now, Toho will sue you sue you to the moon. Like, they don't want any fan films being done. There was a time when Halloween would go after people. There were times when Star Trek really kind of set the trend. They went after a company that was making a $1.2 million fan film called Axanar. They got sued by CBS. Les Moonves sued them. And then it actually sort of was the most public case that I can think of that set those rules, that there was a rule of like $50,000 was the limit that you could raise. 25 minutes was the runtime that you could have, and you couldn't have franchise alumni show up and continue their storylines. Well, Never Hike Alone has broken all of those rules, but again, it comes down to our franchise rights holders. So when asked about it, when you ask Sean about like, hey, what do you think about Never Hike Alone? He goes, what's Never Hike Alone? Because he really doesn't pay attention and he doesn't care. Mm. I know because I've met him 3 times. He doesn't remember me. And each time, and when people ask him about Never Hike Alone, he's like, ah, yeah, whatever. Like, it's not a big deal to him. I went to a conference with Victor Miller, who was there digitally. He was on a screen. And one of the fans asked him, what do you think about all these fan films that are coming out? Because there were so many fan films at that event. He goes, I don't care. They're not impacting me. Like, if anything, they're helping keep the franchise alive. So
right.
I'm not going to spend any of my time after doing all this other legal BS going after fan films for stuff because I'm not worried about what, like, again, at the end of the day, no matter how good one of our fan films does, as soon as something official comes out, like, we're all going to get blown out of the water. It's not even going to be close. So we'll just be lucky if there's some remnants of this left when they come back and start doing this again. So, you know, everything else since then and everything that we've done has been an experiment. What can we get away with? What can't we get away with? And everything has been geared towards how do we make it so how can we get fans Blu-rays because they're requesting them without making a profit and without getting sued? Well, the only way to do it was to try. So we did it and basically, like, you know, we don't print a million Blu-rays and put them in the Walmart and Amazon and sell them till the end of time. We basically say, like, if you want this, you can pay to have it made. And if everybody pays $20, $30, $40, and enough people pay it, that means we can pay for the fees to get the Blu-ray disc image made. That means we can get the master disc made. That means we can get 2,000 copies made. But we're only going to sell it for a limited time, and the proceeds are only going to go towards making the production whole. So it's either going to do towards the shipping and production of the actual Blu-rays. And like the first time we did it, we were severely in debt for making the first movie. So we paid off all the pending debts that we had. And it broke us back to even, and then we had a little bit of money left over. That went to J.D. March's fund. We went to Penny Pines Restore Reforestation Project. And then the only thing I did selfishly with the money was I took a little bit of it out to pay for 2 to 3 weekends where me and a producer went back up to the original camp where we shot Never Hike Alone. We bought wood, we bought tools, and different things to go up and fix the camp. And that, when I say fix the camp, that's taking down all the broken boards that were hanging off and like in danger of falling on people. All the glass that was in the windows, one which cut my arm at one point during filming, we knocked out all the glass and dumped it in sort of a safe place to dump it. And just went up over a series of weekends and cleaned the entire place up so that when other hikers went up there to visit or fans found out where we made the movie and wanted to go visit, that we basically built like a living museum of, we kept as many of the sets up as that we could, and everything else we just cleaned so it wasn't dirty and filthy and nasty. We called that Project College Camp. So it's basically, you just got to be clever. You know what I mean? As long as you're clever and you're not, and like now the campaign's over, I'm not like on eBay selling them, or I'm not on, you know, I'm not doing anything that's like massive profit. The studios don't care. What they care about is if you're making millions of dollars and they're not getting a cut. Which at that point, if we started making millions of dollars, it'd be like a cut. Why don't you just buy us out and put us on shelves and we can all make millions?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? That's my ultimate goal for Never Hike, is that, like, at the end of the day, if you guys think it's good enough and enough fans like it, why don't you test the market with it? Because it's something that's already made and you don't have to do any development on. You can just slap a logo on it, put it in stores or put it on streaming and let it make money for you. Yeah. And I know that opens up a gray area because now everyone wants to make their Friday the 13th film and do it. But like, you know, it's been 6 years, and I can't say there are many other fan films out there that you could do this for. And if you could do that for other fan films, it's not necessarily a bad thing because, again, there's no investment from the studios other than when they need to get it into the next level of stuff. Do a dual disc of a bunch of fan films. You know what I mean? Like, get people, like, celebrate. Don't penalize people for it. Celebrate what we've done. And, you know, make more people aware of it because it only helps spread the word about Friday the 13th too. I mean, think about that. If an official studio was like, hey, we rallied on the back of our fans because they did so much great work. Yeah. I think that would make you more apt to be a fan yourself. You know what I mean? I think it's a cool story. I think that it's a win-win for everybody. But at the end of the day, we're happy to have made them. I can't wait for Never Hike Alone 2 to come out. I'm really proud of what we've done so far, the way it's coming together. Mike just started cutting a couple weeks ago on the stuff that we've already started shooting. So very excited to get in and start seeing some of these scenes. We may do another sneak preview sometime in July. Nice. And show people another part of the movie. It'll be the same thing. It'll be like just a whole chunk of the movie that you're going to watch. Probably about a 2-3 minute clip. But again, it just shows off some really cool stuff. Doesn't give too much away. And it's part of the story that you're already anticipating at some point. So I think it's cool. And it brings some of the new characters into the fold. And then after that, it's just going to be in March to October and getting this thing screened and seeing what people think and seeing where the chips fall.
Yeah. So exciting. So exciting. Yeah. Jimmy or Joe, did you guys have any?
Yeah, I do. I want to jump in, you know, as a look, I saw this movie as a kid. It the original Friday the 13th. When did you see it? And when was your first experience watching? And which was the first film that you saw?
The first one for me, I think, was either part 6 or it was part 7 because I remember the intro and then jumping around from there. And then I watched them all out of order a bunch of times and then finally watched the first one. I didn't know where Jason was and I was so confused. And then he had the bag on his head and I was confused again. Mm-hmm. And then I started watching it. Then it became like, wait, what's going on with these movies? And I just started watching them over and over again. And for me, part 6 is my favorite. Probably my top 3 is 6, 4, 2. I think that that's sort of a pretty solid order of, I think, hierarchy for me as far as the way what I love about Jason, what I love about the films. Mm-hmm. And I think that those three films really execute Jason at the highest level, have good scares, have good tone. And just overall, just like what made me scared. And that's what I kind of base my stuff off of.
Have you thought about, you know, obviously the best leading lady was Amy Steele. Come on, let's be real.
Steele's my favorite.
Maybe bring her on this, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm all about, like, you know, incorporating alumni when it makes sense. We did incorporate Amy for the Jason Risen project where it did make sense. We were able to marry her in with the Adrian King's Alice revival. And that made a little bit of sense. You know, I did want to try and get, of course, Megan Garris, Jen Cook. I didn't want to bring her back, but she's not doing film anymore. So that was unfortunate. We couldn't work that into the script. It would have been a much different movie if she was in the movie, actually. It actually would have been a much different way in. But unfortunately, she wasn't there, so we just kind of hint at it. If you notice, Tom wears a wedding ring in the movie, so that's really all we say about it. But you don't see her around, so you kind of got this feeling that, like, maybe Tommy threw his life away to go hunt Jason all these years, and maybe she didn't want to stick around and deal with that, but he never stopped loving her, so... That's sort of what we went with. It's a little wistful and melancholy, but so is Tommy's life in the movie, so it kind of fits.
That's great. Nice.
I also wanted to make sure that I, you know, visually or verbally compliment you on how well that trailer was cut. It's absolutely gorgeous, and I have to say I feel so bad when I found out that the child actor. That's his actual haircut now.
Is that it's funny because
wearing a wig during that.
No, we cut his hair into that. That's Horror Stevie. Oh, he's from Atlanta. He's a cosplayer himself. He let us cut his hair. He had long, long hair, and we cut it into the bowl cut. But
it's awesome.
Yeah. But it only got that way when we had it straightened. So after it got. After he would get out of like the water or anything, it would curl right up. And so we actually had a hair person on set who was straightening his hair between takes, and drying it. It was really funny. He's a sport for letting us do it. He was a dead ringer for Corey Feldman, young Corey Feldman. Yeah. We thought it was nice. Like the opening really kind of brings you on this journey of the three different Tommies. Like, you know, there's references to John Shepard with the Roy mask, but also the Pinehurst stuff and the Tommy tapes. And that this is Tommy's life, like from a young boy to this now elder statesman. He's been haunted by this ghost and it hasn't left him. And ever since part 6 and the events of part 7 and 8, when Jason got back out and Jason's still out there and people are still disappearing, you know, Tom still feels that guilt. He still feels haunted by Jason that he's still out there. And, he's determined to do something about it. And that's what this movie's about. But it's also about like the fact that, yeah, he's wanted to do something about it, but he hasn't been able to do anything for 20 years because he can't find Jason. It isn't until someone escapes that all of a sudden all of the secrets are revealed. He's finally able to do what he has been training for all of these years. But now it's been a long time. So is he ready for it? Or, you know, he may have been, thought he was ready, but like, is it now, can he actually say what he's going to do? And luckily he's got two people to help him out as well. So never hike alone. But it's a fun story. I think it's an emotional one. I think that's one of the things I'm proud of, is the fact that I brought a lot of emotion into it. There's a lot of real drama. It feels like a real town, and then shit hits the fan and everyone has to adjust, and it becomes a lot of fun. And then there's a lot of action. And, you know, once the action starts towards the back half of the film, it's just like the first Never Hike Alone. It doesn't stop. It goes from one scene to the next, and people are just fighting for their lives.
Well, yeah, it sounds so exciting. Yeah.
So have you ever thought about looking into other properties that may not be in the horror genre to do fan films?
No, I'm going to be done with fan films after this. Like, we have Dylan's New Nightmare, which is going to do a soft premiere in July at Mad Monster in Arizona. We're going to show what we have for the film right now and pitch maybe we can do some extra shooting, stuff like that, add stuff to it. You know, we're going to get some feedback. We have some ideas of what we want to do before we release it, probably later on in the summer. I've helped out with a lot of other fan films, Halloween fan films, Nightmare fan films, Jason fan films, gave a lot of stuff like that. But everything for me after this is original. I really got to get some more original work out there. I've been sitting on a lot of original material, mostly because of the pandemic and, you know, being able to afford productions and things like that. So now that this is out of the way, and this was something I told people I was going to do, so I had to, you know, I follow through on what I say I'm going to do, and we got this going. And this is, like I said, like, so passionate about telling this story that it doesn't matter that everything else is going to have to wait, because this is the one thing that I couldn't go forward with and say, like, I wish I would have made it. Like, I'm making it. Like, I'm not going to look back on this and say, I had this opportunity, this one little window to do it, and then I let time pass by.
Right.
That it was like, no, this is the only one that's like, you know, these people are only going to be around right now. The opportunity with no Friday the 13th coming out is only going to be right now.
Yep.
And I may never get an opportunity to tell the Tommy Jarvis story if I do go to the studio, because they don't want to pull Tommy back in that way, because the rights are so crazy. Like, it's not easy. It's not like they could just pull Tommy in. There's so many, there's a reason why Tommy hasn't come back, and it has to do with studio sort of bullshit with the way that rights work. So that's the great thing about the fan films, that it's allowed us to just skirt around all the bullshit and get to the fact that what people want without too much argument. It's like, people want to see more Tommy. Well, we brought back Tommy, and we're telling a story about Tommy, and that's what we're giving people. Because that's what I want, and that's what I've wanted to see, and along with all the other things in the film. So that's been like the big plus of all of this.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously a labor of love, and there's nothing that I root for more than somebody doing a labor of love and devoting so much of their time. And it is inspiring what you're doing and what you have done. And I know that there are a lot of young kids out there who are interested in making their own movies, and they're going to watch this and they're going to say, wow, he did this. I can do this. Maybe I can do this someday, you know, and they will make their own Halloween or their own, you know, whatever franchise, Scream or whatever that they are into.
Police Academy.
Yeah. I will say this, you know, for all the original stuff I want to do, I will say that if someone wants to hire me to remake something or do a sequel to something, hey, I proved, you know, if anything, I can take something and run with it. Yeah. I know how to build off a story and things like that. So either way, I'm just happy to sort of work at a professional level and get to work with bigger and better budgets and, you know, get my team elevated up there to work on some projects that we just want to, at the end of the day, it's just to make the audience go, wow. You know, we just want to give them an experience where they walk out of the theater, or they walk out of a screening, or they click off YouTube and they go, holy crap, I can't believe that's what I just watched. It wasn't what I expected, and it was so much more. And you know, it's a good way to sort of, as a creative, to get that's what we want. You know what I mean? Like, pays the bills, that's good. Like, tell me the movie's good. That's what I want to hear. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go work at Staples if I need to make my income. But if you tell me my movie's good, that's what's going to make me happy. I don't care if I made a bunch of money, because if you hate the movie, the money's not going to mean anything.
Yeah.
Well, you made a good movie, man. You made a couple great movies. Seriously. Mm-hmm. This is, look, as a Friday the 13th fan, I love this franchise. It's my favorite franchise next to Mad Max. You made one of the best ones. I know. I agree. I've said that online. I say it all the time. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you say 6, 4, and 2 are your favorites. I would say that your Never Hike Alone would be one of my favorites of the whole franchise. So
thank you. That's like a dream goal, you know, when you're getting into it, like maybe we can make them, but people will think it's just as good. And like, so to hear people say it and actually talk about it that way, it just, like, for me, I just think it really sort of, it's rewarding, because I've talked about Friday the 13th in a specific way for a long time and said, these are the things I'd always want to see about it, because I think this is what would elevate this series in a positive way without losing the core aspect of what we love about it. So to see it be successful and be like, okay, then I was right. There could be more films like this. And this is a good template model to say, go make more stuff like this. It doesn't all have to be the formula. It doesn't all have to be like goofy and, you know, over the top and sort of like not taken seriously. Like, you could actually take it a little bit more seriously and get a lot of mileage out of it.
Totally. Yeah,
I agree. Cool. I agree.
Well, we will have to have you back maybe after it comes out, and we can bask in the glow of a very successful release wherever it gets released to. I'm imagining it'll be YouTube, right? Is there any potential for it to be like on? And there are probably no streaming services that you could do it.
It will just be for free. It'll be for free on YouTube if you back the Indiegogo campaign, which is still going on right now. You can get a digital download of the movie. You can get a Blu-ray of the movie that will come with commentary and behind the scenes and a whole bunch of other fun extra stuff. And for free on YouTube. And that's where it will live for a long time. And now we can do it in 4K as well. So Never Hike Alone was released on 4K and on YouTube. We just put that up. So that's the first one's encroaching on 4 million views. So it should be about next week. We do have the 4K version we can watch, which is a little bit crisper and fun. Never Hike in the Snow is in 4K. And then eventually, hopefully, we'll do like a master cut of everything in 4K, which will be cool. It'll probably be like a 2-hour movie at that point.
And that would be cool.
But that's down the line. But no, I really do appreciate the kind words. And of course, I'll be by. And I'm proud to say that CineScare is a big part of what we're doing. You guys are producers on the movie. You have it's CineScare Productions at the front. So it's cool. So it's cool to have you as a part of our team, really. I mean, you've joined the Womp Stomp team. So welcome aboard.
Well, we love being a part of it. And thank you so much for letting us be a part of it. And, we will be big promoters and supporters of you guys and you specifically as long as you go. So no matter, we'll be following you no matter what. So.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. And everybody out there, be on the lookout for any trailers. And also go to YouTube, look for Never Hike Alone, look for Never Hike in the Snow, and then eventually Never Hike Alone 2. This is one of the only guys you probably will ever hear from who has played Jason and Michael Myers. I loved the Michael Myers or the Halloween fan film where you played Michael.
And technically, because of some reshoots that we did on Dylan's, I technically play Freddy now. So I will get a Freddy credit.
That's amazing.
Not to take away from everything that Dave did. Dave owns the role. He did it. I did something very small, but technically I got to be Freddy for a shot. So I'm throwing in my hat and they're like, I did it. So now I got to do Leatherface and then I got the final four.
Yeah,
maybe Leatherface. I can shave my head and do Pinhead another day too, but then I got to shave the mustache too.
I'd love to see you play what's the killer from The Burning. That would be fantastic.
Oh, Cropsy. That would be fun. Cropsy. Yeah, I would love to see. Yeah. I would love to see a remake of The Burning. That'd be cool.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Oh, it's ripe for a remake, I think. So maybe Womp Stomp Films. Who knows?
Maybe,
who knows?
Yeah. Only if Jason Alexander comes back as a counselor.
We'll bring Holly Hunter, too.
And Holly Hunter. And I can't remember his name. The guy who was on Succession. I can't remember his name now. But
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thin guy. But. Okay. And unfortunately, of course, this week, Mark was not able to be with us. So before next time, Joe, what are the movies that Mark wanted us to watch?
Mark was dying to do a franchise again, and he landed on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I am believing we're going to be watching the original 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre, mm-hmm. which is on Shudder.
Excellent movie.
We will be watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Love it.
Which is on Excellent Max.
Well. I love that movie. Love it.
So we will be watching Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
Yeah. Underrated. I like that movie too.
Unfortunately, is a rental. A little, and then 1995's Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation, which is also a Amazon Prime rental.
You guys seen that one yet?
I have not seen Next Generation. No.
Oh yeah, we'll have.
What's the one with McConaughey?
That's the one.
That one, yeah.
That's the one, the 95 one. Okay. I actually own that one, and I've never watched it.
Oh, you're lucky because we have to rent it. Damn it.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think I might own that one. I just remember watching it with my wife, and she's, why is she screaming and laughing all the time? It's so ridiculous. You guys.
And it's Renee Zellweger too, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes,
it is. Yeah.
Well, that'll be a good four movies, or at least two good movies and one. Okay. And then one to watch. Yeah. And Joe, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Thanks for stopping by, Vincent.
Yeah, thank you so much. Of course, thanks for having me. And we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Hello. Hi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, really? Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Haven't watched it yet.